The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Are you ready to create a life that's intentional and dynamic? Welcome to The Intentional Spirit with your host, Reverend Temple Hayes.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the show today. Thank you so much for being an intentional spirit. I just love it when I say those two words, intentional spirit. I'd like you to think about what those two words mean to you. For me, they're so much broader than goals or masterminding or vision boarding and all those kind of things. I think are so powerful, and I have certainly used each and every one of them and will continue to do so. But there's something about the follow through. There's something about it's a great ideal to move into, but there's something that makes a distinction about I followed it through. After 2 months, I didn't give up. I didn't walk away, or I didn't put it on hold. We have moments in our lives that with things of the best of intentions, we put them on hold and we start living in the waiting room, God's waiting room. I'm waiting on to get complete. I'm waiting on the kids to go away from college. I'm waiting to meet the love of my life. I'm waiting till I lose weight. I'm waiting till I give up addiction. One of mine was, I'm waiting till I have it all together. Well, Reverend Serena is our guest today. We don't even need to go there. Can you imagine if I were waiting till I had it all together? So, I mean, I'd be in the afterlife, right? I don't even know. But anyway, there's the intentional spirit. You keep making choices. You keep putting a foot in front of you. And I'm elaborating about today because the person I'm interviewing, I have the utmost respect for, Serena Himmer. Everyone, please welcome my guest today, for she is truly an intentional spirit. Thank you for being here, girl.
Oh, thank you. I am so excited about this. I'm so grateful. Thank you, Reverend Temple.
Well, just for the purpose of this show, just call me Temple. You can call me Jay. You can call me anything. Just call me, okay? But you can just refer to me as Temple Hayes. Just don't call me Temple Ann, because that means you're mad at me. All right. So absolutely. So you are a trailblazer. You're an artist. You have brought so much to being a counselor, a support system for children. And very recently, you've allowed the creative juices to flow through you. I am just so thrilled to watch you and watch you shine. Because I know a lot about you. I've been following you for a long time. But tell some of our listeners, you know, how did you get on a path of life matters and I matter and you matter? What happened? What bridge? What connection? It seems that all of us have a story of why we started caring or participating or whatever. Tell us a lot about your life, because our listeners are from all over the world and most don't know you, and we want to give them an opportunity to do so.
Thank you. Well, I married quite young at 18, right out of high school, and I had my son at 21. And I was in that marriage for 20 years, and, there were a lot of wonderful things that happened, but there were also a lot of extremely challenging and almost life-threatening kinds of things that happened as well. And so when I look back, as I went through my healing from that marriage, I realized that that marriage brought me to my spiritual awakening and to the big turning point in my life. And it really helped me clarify who I'm here to be. And so I sat down finally, you know, I was 38 years old, and I finally sat down and said, okay, I've apparently made sort of a mess of things, so I'm just wondering, God, what did you have in mind, you know? Mm-hmm. And what I heard was that voice, that inner voice say, what makes your heart smile? And having been a dancer, a little bit of an artist and things, I of course, said dance and art, but I also said children and healing and helping nurture people back to health. And so that's when I started to school. And I went in, actually, to early childhood development, wanting to work with little children. And as I sort of healed my inner child through my own work in over those years, I realized, oh, okay, it's time to work with adults, too. So I branched out. And then initially I thought I wanted to work with people who were experienced alcohol and drug issues. And then I said, no, that's not really it. I think it's really working with children, women, families, and really helping parents understand developmental stages, you know, being able to really communicate and listen to children, the wisdom of children, and nurturing their self-esteem. I just knew that was so key for, you know, our future, for parents to know how to do that and to be able to work with children who were going through difficult times, which led me then once I acquired my master's, I had worked in administration at the state level for several years. And then I did go back and get my master's and so I could do clinical counseling. And I started out working in the inner city as a therapist, and I went into a lot of different homes and worked with families that were really, you know, challenged and really just trying to get by. And there was a lot going on in those families. They taught me so much. And the next step was to go and to work in residential facility with teens who had experienced all sorts of abuse, were trying to stay out of jail, or had just gotten out of juvenile detention. And they gave me an opportunity to use all my gifts with art and drama and dance and music and my clinical skills to create an expressive arts program and to work with the teens through the arts, just through the arts. Every client I saw, every youth I saw, I got to do art and music and dance and drama and pottery and all of that with. And it was amazing how they healed through the arts. And so I've always incorporated the arts in all of my work. And while I was doing all that, I also became ordained and studied to be able to do that. It's been an interesting journey. It's full. It's been full.
You're starting to remind me of someone that I know. not that I need your story to become my own, but you are starting to remind me of somebody that I know really well. And it's like, you know, when I get on a radio show or something or a Zoom or someone's interviewing me and they start talking about all the things I've done, I start thinking, I'm getting tired.
Once in a while.
Because I know in all seriousness in the world, it is not I, but the spirit within me who doeth the works, you know, because I know that.
That is so true.
And I know
so
that about you as well, but it's like you're likened to Oprah of use me up, you know, while I'm here, mm-hmm. use me up in a healthy way, you know, in a very dynamic and healthy way. And, and wow. So not to interrupt you, but I was just like, let's take a breath.
I know. My story
in my spare time, you know, in my spare time when nothing else was going on, well, I decided to get ordained in addition to everything else. So, you're a living example of one day at a time, right?
Well, that's been a big part of my life for the last 40 years. I have, you know, I have worked that as an Al-Anon program. I've worked the 12 steps, so that's something else, you know, that really helped move me in the direction that I've gone, you know, as a spiritual, on my spiritual journey as well. So that's been a real core foundation in my walk through life, too. Yes, one day at a time.
Well,
and I just every day, you know, I'm here. Like you said, I am here, and I they let me be the best bit of love and action that I can be today. That's it. So.
Yep, engagement, being engaged in life itself. Well, you know, if you're standing on the sidelines and you take like a magnifying glass and you look at your life as a dot that connected to a dot or a road that connected to a road, whatever, it's like, it's so incredible. You know, that's why, you know, I always ask people to step back from your life and look at how each road led you to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. And I will say that yours is just a whole lot more obvious than a lot of people. And it is, and I mm-hmm. say that with grace, and I say that with the utmost respect. And I think it's a story that needs to be told of, well, I was doing that, and then this opportunity came, and what I thought was going to come didn't, but then I wound up doing this. But what almost happened didn't happen, but yet God's delays are not God's denials, and I wound up over here. Because that is so true about you, because you have been shape-shifted to be the perfect person to write books. I mean, you can do it all. You illustrate it. You know, you've got your character. You know, the wisdom that you're putting in there that will affect and impact a child's psychology. I mean, come on. It's just amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, Pearl came about, my main character, Pearl. She has lots of friends and family and dogs and everything now. And she came about because when I was little, I felt like I was adopted. I was the middle child, and I sort of disappeared. So I worked real hard at being seen. You know, I tried to be perfect in my dance and my hair, my room, everything, my grades and all that. And I just still felt invisible. And she came about because I thought I was adopted and my real name was Pearl White. And one day I was at the doctor's office in the lobby with my mother, and there was a little girl about my age who had a box. And my mother said, "Oh, what's in your box?" And the little girl said, "A new doll." And mom said, "Can we see your doll?" And she pulled out this doll named Poor Pitiful Pearl. And I related to this Poor Pitiful Pearl doll. I was like, "Oh, that's me, you know, poor me." And I spent so many years in that Poor Pitiful Pearl mode, like 38 or so. And so, again, when I went through my healing process and worked on healing my inner child, I found my old, I got that doll from my aunt, and I found my old Pearl doll, and I washed her up, fixed her hair, which my sister had cut her ponytail off, so she was even more pitiful. But, and I washed her all up, got her a new dress and a blankie and just, you know, a little bow for her hair. And I renamed her Precious Pearl. And so that was almost 40 years ago.
Wow, that's such a butterfly metaphor, isn't it? From cocoon to gorillas to then now a free butterfly. Now, did I understand you correctly? Did you say you were adopted or you felt like you were?
No, I felt like I was. I thought I was.
Do you know that that's my story too?
I know it is. I know.
I'm just now just kind of breathing that in, because there's not an active world going around us. We're just audio and taking it in. And, you know, I felt that way too. And I'm grateful that I'm comfortable enough with myself that I'm okay to say that. And I don't mean that towards it's less than to be adopted. No. To me, I think people that are adopted are so special because they're really chosen, you know.
Yeah.
But I just assumed I was adopted. And but unlike you, I was still asking my mom in my 40s, tell me I was adopted. It was okay, because I just felt like I should have been in Nepal, you know, at a mystery school or something, instead of this little bitty town that I was just so black sheep. But that's funny. That's a real common thread that we have. There is a certain kind of essence about you. When you feel like you're adopted and no one's telling you. You think you are and nobody's saying anything. And, you know, I just kept opening up the room. Like, I'm okay to talk about it. I really wouldn't be surprised. I actually think I am. And Mom would go, if I have to tell you that one more time, you know, and like I said, I think I was like in my middle 40s when I said, well, I guess I wasn't.
I know. Oh, my mom, she had 6 children. She wasn't awake for any of them. So I don't know. But anyway, so when I was pregnant for my son, oh, I was 21, I went to Mom and I said, well, what was your pregnancy with me like, you know, and was I early, was I late? I said, there are stories about all the other kids, but I've never heard my birth story, like going to the hospital and what happened and how long it took or any of those things. And she said, you know, I really don't remember that. And I said, okay, Mom, I always knew I was adopted, and I was kind of teasing that. And I said, it's okay, and I'm grateful that you and Dad adopted me, you know, and brought me up and gave me all this love.
And oh, that's she was too upset. Wild. Well, I will tell you that I did have that story. And we, you know, you and I don't have to be counselors to each other on the radio show today, but I do know that people do feel, you know, certain levels. But I literally, it was 48 hours for me to be born. And the doctor actually told my dad that he might have to pick or choose one of us. So even though I had that story, I still felt that way. And I, you know, and I wasn't sure if that was a made up story, a real story or whatever, but I still felt that way. Like, who are these people? And I don't know that we're the right tribe. I spent the majority of my life looking for family. And I imagine you have too. Family meaning a la familia, maybe not by blood, but by choice, right?
Yes. Yes. Because I never felt, you know, and like so many that you talk to that are, you know, on a spiritual journey and are conscious of that and at Unity, they'll say, you know, I never felt like I fit in. I never felt like I belonged here. I didn't even feel like I belonged on Earth. You know, I felt that way too. I know, that's true. But Mom came back a couple weeks later and she said, I remember now when you were born. I go, you do? What about this and that? She said, oh, I don't remember that. She said, I just remember it was awful darn hot. I was born July 23rd.
Bless her heart. They have no idea that we're looking for, you know, some fireworks here, or, you know, some kind of romance about the whole thing in some way, right? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But anyway, so Pearl has been, you know, my little inner healer for a long time now, and I wanted to be able to share her finally, and the pandemic or whatever you want to call that, what we've been going through, this transition, this opportunity over the last year, gave me that time to really focus on her and to bring her into the world.
Well, you've done an amazing job. And for those of you that are tuning in with us, I'd like you to go to the website Pearls, plural, pearlswisdom.site, as in website. So pearlswisdom.site, and look at, you'll just fall in love with Pearl. She's just like the cutest thing. She's the person that we all want to be on some level. But the first book is I Am Me, I Am, and it addresses the imperativeness of self-image and self-confidence and how that is achieved through Pearl's story. But Serena, I think you've done an amazing job. And what has been some of the feedback that you've gotten from Pearl?
Well, luckily I can read some of the reviews, you know, on Amazon too, and then from friends and relatives. And some people on Amazon have said, I thought I bought this for my daughter, my son, and I realized it was for me too. You know? So there's that little child in all of us, and people have enjoyed her. So she's got another book that is almost ready for publication. I'm looking at May 1st, and this one includes some friends and her dog, and it's called Feelings Are Like Clouds.
Wow. Feelings are like clouds. Oh, that's powerful.
Yeah. And then the other day, actually, as I was doing a counseling session, I was having this conversation with one of my clients about the exchange of energy in relationships and how sometimes we may push our energy towards somebody, you know, trying to overpower them, or we may pull energy from them. And we have to really decide, you know, or really be conscious of our energy and their energy and have this really more beautiful exchange of rainbow energy, like a rainbow connection. And we kind of laughed as we're like, oh, you know, the rainbow connection. And I thought, oops, that's another book. Wouldn't it be wonderful? Oh,
yeah, it definitely is. It would be a great book. Talk to me a little bit about feelings or clouds. What was the premise of the overview of that?
Well, it's still for younger children, so I don't go into a lot of cognitive behavioral type of things, although I have another one coming, too, about feelings and how we can change our thinking. But this one's really just about knowing that feelings can change and we don't have to stay stuck in them. You know, they're like the clouds. When you look at the clouds and you watch the clouds, they change. And sometimes they show up in different shapes and forms. But we're able to just notice them and say, wow, I see you. I feel you. And it's okay, you know, and it can just move on and change into something else. So it's really for younger children to just start
well,
to
I,
know.
No, I would agree with you. I do think you're right, but I also think that everybody needs to read that. I think it may be designed for children, but I know many people that right now could use a copy of that, you know, because there's such a misunderstanding and judgment about someone's feelings. And, you know, as years as a counselor or a life coach or whatever I might call myself at a given time, what I have observed deeply is people's inability to access their feelings, identify with them, and understand projected feelings, delayed feelings, you know, feelings that you're putting that on that innocent person at the grocery store when it really is about something that happened 6 weeks ago with someone else. And there's such a disassociation from the feelings itself. And I think that in that way, you know, your books are powerful because they're teaching the, if you will, like the unity way of life in a different form, which is so necessary and needed, but in a different connection. I don't know that I ever told you this, but I was so thrilled when Miracle at four, let's see, no, at five. So her fifth birthday, she made a big deal out of it because she was at the age of picking the cake and picking what she wanted and the bouncy thing and all the stuff, you know. And I definitely contributed to the cause, but knew all along that I would be out of town. Did I tell you this? What happened?
No.
Okay.
No.
So anyway, so I knew I'd be out of town, and she'd go, Mama Temple, you know, you're not coming. I said, honey, no, I'm going to be in Nolens, and I won't be there and blah, 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 but I'm going to video in, and I'm going to see you, and my mom's going to be there, and I'm all for you and all that stuff, you know. And so in December, like 4 days before Christmas, we're driving down the road, and she said, Mama Temple, I want you to know that I still have anger in my heart because you didn't come to my birthday party.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I thought, isn't this a great day? Isn't this like the most amazing thing? Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. That she feels safe to say that? That
Absolutely.
She identifies enough with her own inner being that that's what's happening for her? That was
Absolutely.
Literally... 6 weeks later.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
And I just found that amazing. And those are the kids. I mean, that's who you were and who I was too, you know, as Indigo kids. But it's so nice to see that happening with children. And no, I didn't fix it. And I didn't say, well, that'll never happen again, because you know what? It might.
Yeah.
But I looked for ways and values and an experience that I could have that I could allow some kind of bridge that we could tie the two ideas together. But I love that. And I think that's so
absolutely.
Great well, of how you're identifying. How did you get the idea that it would be related to clouds?
I was in a counseling session with a four-year-old one day, and we were talking about feelings. And so I always do art, and so that's what we did. We started cutting out clouds and putting feeling words on the clouds, and then noticing that, you know, clouds can change, and so can feelings. And, you know, they just like us to say, oh, I see you, I feel you. And so that's how that came about.
I just think it's a very powerful thing. And some feelings just evaporate on their own.
They do, yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to give them any power at all. You know, or identify them in any particular way. Everyone, I'm talking with Serena Himmer, licensed social worker, MSW, also reverend. She is a mover and shaker and a person of many hats. Love that you connect with us on our radio show, Intentional Spirit. We have a lot of back shows that you can watch, that you can tune into on Unity Online Radio. As well as, I'd love to hear from you and hear what kind of shows you like to hear about and know about. And we're here to, you know, share this incredible journey we call life together, that's for sure. And go to Serena's website. It's pearlswisdom.site. And visit me at templehaze.com. We'll be right back after this short break.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to The Intentional Spirit with Reverend Temple Hayes.
You know what I'm saying? Welcome back, everyone, and thank you so much. We're having a wonderful conversation today with Reverend Serena Himmer. You know, you can also go to her website. It's R-E-V, shortened Reverend. It's R-E-V Serena, S-E-R-E-N-A.com. And you can read that. She offers all different types of services, and that you can do all those services online or Zoom or Skype. It's a new world that we live in now. So all of these things don't have to be geographically aligned. They can be offered anywhere. I've done a few weddings on Skype, and it works just well, and I'm sure it does with you, Reverend Serena. The other thing is, of course, we're talking about, there's many things to talk about with her journey in her life and human behavior, etc. We're going to delve more into that further. But that being said, her art has become taking art and wisdom and all her years as a therapist and creating these wonderful books by Pearl. So you can go to Pearl's Wisdom. It's just P-E-A-R-L-S Wisdom dot site, S-I-T-E, as in website. So Pearl's Wisdom dot site, and access the book and be aware of the up and coming two books that are coming out pretty soon. Feelings Are Like Clouds. And also a book about rainbows, right?
Rainbow Connection, sort of. No title yet, but yes.
Yeah. Well, I can see that probably everywhere you are, you've got your little notebook. Do you do that? I do that. I've got a notebook in my purse that I take notes all the time. Like, this would be good. That'd be good. Oh, do that. So you're on a roll with these books. It's really, really great. Great to see.
Well, speaking of taking notes, there was a commercial that came on just before we came on, and it was Mr. Rogers. I don't know if you've heard that comes on, and he was saying, the truth is inside all of us. What is important is that you are you. And I thought, well, that's all Pearl's story, too.
Yeah, that's Pearl right there. That's Pearl, exactly. Living her story. Well, I just think she's cute as she can be. especially that permed hair. That's something I always wanted but can't do, but it sure is cute.
Yes. I always wanted that curly hair myself. So.
Yeah, we won't even touch that one today.
No.
Well, how did the insight of, as I know a lot of people long to be authors, but longing to be and becoming are two very different windows. How did you, why did books start having your name on them? What was that call?
What was that called?
You know, like, did you go, I've been wanting to do this all my life, or did somebody say to you, you really ought to put this stuff down? How did you, being an author, because that's another multidimensional aspect of yourself, how did that happen with you?
Well, this is an interesting story. And I think around 2006 or 2007, I went to a workshop weekend conference with Arianne Williamson. And I had this wonderful friend. She always made sure we were in the front row, too. It was wonderful. And so at one point, Marianne guided us through a meditation. And in this meditation, I heard that I was to write books about the children I had worked with. And I was seeing it a different way, you know, when I first got it. And it was funny because I took all my books from Marianne Williamson up to the table for her to sign. And she looked up at me. And this is what happened. She looked up at me and she said, "When are you going to write your books about the children?" I like wide-eyed, and I said, "Well, I just now wrote that in my journal after the meditation you guided us through." And she just looked at me like with a question mark and shook her head and smiled. And so that was a long time ago, but that stayed with me. And like I said, I had a different idea of what I was going to write. And then it just turned into Pearl, and Pearl sharing her story through these books, children's books. So I can incorporate some of the experiences I had with children, some of the things I learned counseling them, and through my own experience of healing, and, do it with a lot of fun, kind of having fun drawing the illustrations. And Pearl went through a lot of changes in her looks. Her first one I drew, I really loved, but then I could never draw it again. I don't know why. And so I kept struggling with her. And finally I said, "Pearl, what is it you look like?" And this is how she came out. And I just said, "That's it." So anyway, that was a little side story. That's how the idea was seeded, was through that meditation at a conference with Marianne Williamson after she
got there. Wow, that's an undeniable story, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, everything comes in its own time. You know, I really believe that. It's not happening. It's not the divine moment for it to happen. And this, like I said, this time that we went through gave me the time. And so once she was launched, it was like, "Oh, now we can do this and this and this, and now we can do a game, and we can do this, and we can do a doll, and we can do that," and all kinds of things, and songs. You know, there's more to come.
So did you find yourself like, did you have any kind of question of that it was yours to do? You know, you had the meditation, then Marianne said, "Let there be light," and you said, "Yes, I was thinking about that." But what was the evolution that, and I do this because we have a lot of people listening that they are in the process of becoming something. And so, you know, that story of hope or that healing story of, "Well, yeah, I started, but yet I didn't feel like me, an author or whatever." How did you get from A to B that you actually said, "It's time and here I am and I'm doing it"? Was there anything that occurred? Or was it just a natural progression?
I had wanted to do it earlier, but my schedule as a therapist and owning my own private practice from 2007 on, I worked like 60, 70 or more hours a week. So
it was always sitting there. And I think that it was just being nurtured as I went on, and it was always there. That seed was being protected, and still had to, like, experience the dirt and the soil and, you know, the rains and the storms or whatever to get it to start to germinate and take root and start to grow enough. And I think once it and the picture I'm getting is that it popped through the soil. And there it was. And I was like, okay, now we really have to take care of this, mm-hmm. you know, for it to continue to really blossom. And so it
just couldn't be denied. It was all around you is denied. What I'm hearing.
Like, there you are. It's time to really nurture and bring it forth in all its fullness. So,
well, has the writing of the books changed you in any way?
I feel just a little bit more confident, but I feel like, I feel like it is a big part of what I'm here to be about. And over the years, I've had people tell me, you're going to reach people all over the world, and things that you share with one person is going to ripple out, and they're going to share it with others and others and others, and it's going to make a difference. And I see these little books being a big part of fulfilling that. And it's not, you know, it's not like, okay, now I'm certainly no big deal. But, you know, it's like, wow, it makes me cry. It makes me cry to think, you know, that the work I've done could affect, you know, lots of people in a positive way. It makes me grateful. It makes me feel honored to be able to be here to do this.
Wow. Your work is so rewarding. I'm looking at some of your blogs, and I love the one from the little girl entitled "They All Lost Their Marbles."
Yes. I have so many stories to get up on there. Yes, that was an amazing process she went through.
Well, that's an incredible story, but kind of the gist of it, it's your story to tell. But so why don't you tell it? You're the one there. I read it, but that's different than, you know, being the true witness to it. But I think it's a very beautiful story, and one that's so needed with 60 to 70% of all people divorce. And what's fascinating, I'm not making it right or wrong at all, because I didn't catch it on my first round either. But, you know, it's surprising the number of, even more so the second time, of the divorce rate. But anyway, share that story with us, because I think it's intriguing. And it also encourages people to go to your website and read your blogs, because they're really good.
Thank you so much. Well, I was I'm counseling children, and I had a new client, and she was right around 7, and her parents were really good. I was so proud of them. They were doing a very good job of co-parenting through this divorce. So mom had brought her in at one point for the initial session. Dad brought her in for the second one, which is the time I got out my sand tray. Now my sand tray is full of sand, has a blue bottom, and I have hundreds and hundreds of miniature toys that they can put. It's really Jungian, you know, it's very Jungian, Carl Jung, and the images and metaphors. So I have all these little images and toys that they can put in. So I asked her, would you show me your family? And she just jumped right in. And she started telling a story. And she's like, once upon a time, there was a happy family. And she placed her mother and her father next to each other. And then she placed herself next to her father. And then she placed her twin sisters next to her mother. Straight line in the middle of the sand tray. And then she put a dog to her right, I guess it was. And she said, as she added these marbles around, she said, yeah, Yes, it was like a beautiful life. And then, and she pulled out that big Star Wars figure that I don't remember the name of, but it looks like an ostrich and like you can ride it and, you know, cross the desert. One of those animals. It was very
right.
big. And she she had these marbles all around the perimeter of the sand tray. And she said, it was a very happy life until the big thing came along. And she took the nose of that animal and she buried all the marbles. And her father was across from me, and we were behind her, so she couldn't see us. And he looked at me and went, mouth, he said, the big thing? And I went, a divorce. And he goes, oh. And so she played that out for a few more sessions, and she kept, you know, going through the same story. And then as we also did therapy, you know, talking and discussing and processing things. I think it was her fifth or sixth session. She had the ostrich figure dig up all the marbles, and she put her father in one corner with the dog and her mom and sisters in the other corner and herself in the middle. And she played out going back and forth between the homes. And she said to me, I don't need to talk about the divorce anymore. What I need to talk about are my twin sisters. I can't stand them.
Oh, my gosh. How that is so endearing, isn't it? But and it's also an example of, and that's what I enjoy about the benefits of your work is that, see, I think that people don't understand. It's like, you know, it's like some people, they talk to their pets like they're a thing, you know, like itsy bitsy, kitsy witsy, itsy bitsy. And there's that sweet, but there's also that if you talk to an animal like a person, they calculate and remember a lot of words, a lot of people's names. I mean, you know, I have one dog that his word vocabulary is off the charts, you know, and the same with kids, though I get it's different and it's a different kind of consciousness, but I like to talk to my little girl like a person, you know, like an adult, not like an expectation with adult abilities, but just to shoot her straight, you know, just to talk to her rather than, oh, they're just little people. They don't know what's going on. And
no,
that's so sad because we did know. We did know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And some people spend, you know, 20 years overcoming that nobody talked about it, the marbles.
Exactly.
You know?
I was actually talking to a client about that today. Her parents divorced when she was very young, and she was 4 or 5, and she remembers that clearly and trying to ask questions about it, and no one would talk to her about it. And now she's going through it, and she has a 4-year-old. And she's like, I want to talk to him, but I don't know how much to tell him. And I said, you know, you explain what's going on developmentally for him at his developmental stage, and you answer any questions just the way he asks them. You give him the information, you give him the truth without, you know, putting down anybody or being, you know, showing your anger about anything, and just continually letting him know how loved he is. And so, you know, we talked through all of that for a while, and she said, I don't want to do it the way it happened to me, you know. She didn't want to do that, so that was very insightful of her, I thought, and aware for her to know that. You know, so we talked about things she could do with him since, you know, and she could get him into therapy. But yeah, kids know, they know. And it's really important to be open, honest at their stage of development. Yeah.
And just to lay it out, because they sometimes, I think, they know before we do, because they're not occupied with, you know, mortgages and calendars and emails and, you know, all the other things that are happening in life. They're pure spirit. They their intuitive ability to listen and hear is profound.
Yes. And they're so wise. I mean, I tell you, those little ones have been some of my greatest teachers in life. They're so wise. They're so connected to Source because they're so close to it. They haven't been here that long. And hopefully, you know, what they know is not being talked out of them. And said, no, you don't know that. No, that door's not going to close. Do you think that door's going to close? No, it's not going to close. And the door's closed. And they're like, oh, no, don't do that again. You know, sort of thing. So we need to keep encouraging them to use that intuition and say, wow, that was pretty cool. You know, letting them be all that they are. Oh, my gosh, nurturing that through life. And giving them choices at those stages of development, every stage of development. 2-year-old, lay out 2 different pairs or 3 different pairs of shoes. You've got to put shoes on, but you can choose which ones to put on. You know, so they learn then to make those positive choices for themselves as they grow into that, you know, peer pressure stage. So very important to, did we lose you?
What do you feel? No, you've done anything but lose me. I'm staying with each word. No, in that with the families you've worked with and the children that you've worked with, what would you say would be a number one like common thing? Is it, do people really just believe that they're broken? Because you know my feelings on that. But what is it that what are people seeking that they don't have, or what is going on that is needed? Just a generic kind of, what would you say that is? That is what we're facing now. Is it addiction? Is it unworthiness? Is it esteem? What is it? Or is it, you know, I'm sure they're connected. I'm just getting the message to ask you the question, even though.
Well, during this year, what I have noticed with all my clients, all ages, is this more intense anxiety. People who've never felt anxious before are feeling an intense level of anxiety. Many professional people who've been very successful and had, you know, huge shifts in the way they do their work or not doing their work at all, you know, they've just lost motivation. They sort of feel like they're losing their social skills even. And for children, I think the biggest thing is that because of technology and emoticons and not being with people in person, especially ones that have come up through this last year at certain young ages, you know, to be able to be empathetic and to be able to read people's, you know, emotions and understand and be empathetic and compassionate. And I think that's a bit true of a lot of generations, actually, that have spent a lot of time online. Addiction is always a big issue, and now it's technological addictions as well as drugs and alcohol. So that's always a thing. Depression has been really high this year. And especially our teens, because their developmental stage is all about interacting with their peers in person. And so that helps them actually develop who they are. You know, they go through the stage of, well, my parents are the center of the universe, and then they move into my peers are the center of the universe before they realize, oh, maybe I need to find the center within myself. And going back to that, taking that idea, is that to me is the goal that we have as parents, caregivers, teachers, therapists, is to help people continue to remember the truth of who they are, which is a magnificent manifestation of the magnificent creator source. That's who mm-hmm. we are. That's always who we've been. And to me, that's our role in the, you know, bringing up children. And if we haven't gone through an upbringing that reminds us of that and helps us remember that, then that's our journey to come back to that knowing.
Well, as you know, in my office, I have a huge canvas of a bridge, a swing bridge mm-hmm. leading to a tree. And to me, that's what those of us that are doing our kind of work or similar or whatever is we are defining. And it has fog too, that leads to that vibrant tree. And it's the ability to be a bridge, to show the bridge that they have the bridge, to be a tree, because that's what trees do. You know, trees have such a strong root system or core that they can weather, you know, any kind of thing that comes along. And that's, to me, it's been so evident, those of us that have spent years developing these core value root systems, that yes, COVID is misfortunate. We're saddened by the people that have been sick or ill and the amount of loss. And, you know, there's all that, definitely, and not to make light of that. But those of us that have developed this core, it's like it didn't really make a difference that much. Do you know what I mean? Right. Our lives just kept on kind of moving on because we found new innovative ways to do things instead mm-hmm. of resisting and regretting and dismissing what is, you know, because yeah. what is. And what is it that we say? The greatest joy can be found in the path of least resistance. Instead of, I hope I get back to normal, or I hope it gets back the way it used to be. There's mm-hmm. no such thing. It's not no. possible.
No.
Those days
no.
are behind us that we knew. No. It doesn't mean that somewhere better, even better, will be created. Yeah. But I just found that too. And I found that in some ways that creates the anxiety of resisting what is.
Exactly. And that's been the conversation with clients all year, is what right now? You know, what right now? That's all there is. And so what mm-hmm. right now? And you know that the image of the tree, I spent 4 days at the Abbey of Gethsemane in the 90s on a silent retreat in the middle of winter. It was so cold. It was like 15 below chill factor.
Oh, gosh.
There was this huge tree, and the trunk was probably 12 or so feet, you know, across. And it was all gnarly, and it was the dead of winter up there in Kentucky. And you could see that this tree had weathered so many storms. I mean, hundreds and probably hundreds of years. And it just kept growing up. It kept reaching up. It kept reaching up. Every time you could see where it had maybe been struck or been, you know, broken off, a new branch started to reach for the sky. And I came back to work one day, and I told a coworker that, and she found a brooch that had a tree on it and was sort of bent over in the wind. And the name of the brooch was, "The Wind Has Taught Me to Dance."
Oh, that's your archetype. Well, a great dancer you are. Everyone, I've been talking today with Reverend Serena Himmer. It's Rev R-E-V Serena, R-E-V-S-E-R-E-N-A .com, or delve into her website and share it with your family and friends, pearlswisdom.site. That's pearls, plural, pearlswisdom.site for her book that she has, and to stay tuned in for the other books that are to come in the future. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. I'm grateful
pleasure.
You were here, and I'm more grateful for the work that you're doing and the impact you're making on society. It's always great to work with light workers that are inspired, encouraged rather than weary, and knowing that the best is yet to come. And thank you for sharing your heart today.
Thank you, Temple. Thank you so much. Love you.
Love you. Many blessings.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'm Dr. Mona Lisa, and I've been a medical intuitive for over 30 years. Let me help you find new ways to heal physical and emotional problems. Be a part of my Healthy Living Intuitively podcast studio audience every week. Follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mona Lisa fan page, and Instagram, Dr. Mona Lisa 1, to get that information. I answer audience questions, and you can learn from people calling in that might be dealing with the same things that you are. Follow Healthy Living Intuitively, part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network, and wherever you get your podcasts.